My name's Rihanna Charles. I am officially a principal costume standby. That's my title. But I'm transitioning into costume supervising, and that's for film and TV.
Yep. And I'm Jodie Simone Howe. I work as a principal costume standby as well. My current project, I'm assistant costume designer, and I also do costume design in short film and music video, as well as dance theatre.
Hi, and welcome to the VFX Artist Podcast. On today's episode, I have the co-founders of the Black Costume Network. During today's discussion, I'm looking to find out more about their journey to becoming costume designers and makers for the film and TV industry, as well as to understand more about their reasons behind creating the Black Costume Network. Let's find out. Welcome to the show, and I'm very happy to have you guys on. Basically, it's been a while. We've been trying to get this organized, and we're here. But I've been quite excited to talk to you guys, just because, yeah, you guys, I think, because we all work in the industry, but you guys, I think, from my side anyway, it's very difficult for knowing a lot about what you guys do. I don't know, most of the time, you're not in the limelight from my point of view or from my experience anyway. So I really wanted to find out more about you guys, especially also because my wife studied fashion. She did a women's textile design. So she was quite excited as well to find out more. Yeah. So if that's okay with you guys, can you just introduce yourselves individually and then just let me know what you guys do?
Yep. Rhea, I think you should go first.
Hi, my name's Rihanna Charles. I am officially a principal costume standby. That's my title. But I'm transitioning into costume supervising, and that's for film and TV.
Yep. And I'm Jodie Simone Howe. I work as a principal costume standby as well. My current project, I'm assistant costume designer, and I also do costume design in short film and music video, as well as dance theatre.
All right. That's amazing. Can you please specify what your roles if you can explain what you basically do on a day-to-day basis, if that's okay, and does what you both do seem to be the same thing, or does it differ?
Go on, Jodie Simone.
I love that you were like this, but on my computer you're there. Yeah. Okay, so I'll let Ree speak about the principal costume standby role, just purely off the basis of we both do that role, but Ree can speak about that, I think, a lot more than I can at the moment. I'll go through costume design just because that's where I'm kind of maneuvering into a lot more at the moment. So every project is completely different. Usually you get sent a script by either the director or producer, and they kind of like, you know, we would love to have you on board this project. Like, please have a look at the script, see if it's something that you're interested in. Once you've got the script, you kind of do like a script breakdown, kind of like have a read of it, kind of start to imagine what the characters are like, who these people are, and then visualize them. And then often you'll kind of create mood boards and send those through to the director. Sometimes the producers are involved in that as well. But then it's kind of a back and forth about kind of, and a meeting of minds for what to actually put on screen when it comes to the characters. That's kind of a vague kind of what you're doing as costume design. Sometimes you do costume illustration as well when it comes to the prep and the beginning of it. Currently, as I said, I'm working as an assistant costume designer on a project with an amazing costume designer called Ruka Johnson, who was the costume designer for Rocks, which I don't know if you've seen, but it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And as an assistant costume designer, essentially your role is to assist the designer in whatever they may need. Sometimes it might be shopping, sometimes it might be fitting, sometimes it might be creating mood boards as well. But essentially you're kind of their like right-hand person to be able to bring their vision to life. On larger projects, there are a couple of costume design assistants. It's not usually just one, but on smaller projects, you kind of usually have one. So yeah, that's kind of, I don't know, vague explanation of what I do. But every day, even in any of those roles, is completely different, and every project is completely different, because I genuinely, every project I've done, I learn something completely new on it as well. So yeah, I don't know about what you think, Ree.
No, yeah, completely. Yeah, every role is different, and every job's different. As a standby, again, similarly. So from like Jodie Simone's point, she'll be at the beginning of the project, and I would jump on probably 1 or 2 months, depending on how long the job is, actually. If it's quite a big movie, maybe a couple of months after setting up. And my role is basically to manage the continuity of the costume that goes on the actor and various actors within the project. So I'm quite late in the process, but I look after the actor. I make sure that they are warm, or like that they're comfortable in their costume. If there's basically a costume has a journey throughout a show, and I work out what that journey is and how it gets from A to B. For example, if there's like a shooting or like a stunt in the show, and there's a progression of a costume getting broken down from start to end. Usually when you're filming, you know this as well, Kofi, you always film out of order. So we might go slap bang in the middle when the costume should be mid broken down. And it's my job to know when that happens. It's my job to also know that I need to have doubles, so that when we go back, that costume's fresh. Yeah. Or if we jump forward, then it's the most broken down version we can have. Mm-hmm. And then my day to day would involve kind of documenting all of that continuity into some sort of Bible, we call it. But have like sync on set that helps us do that, or we just use paper notes. And then there's a couple of standbys across the project depending on the size as well. So currently there's four of us on this job that I'm on, and we all look after like specific cast members. Because it is quite an intense job, and each cast kind of needs their person. So you're still a dresser somewhat to a selection of people. But when you're on set as a standby, you are kind of the designer's eyes, because the designer can't always be there. So all of that conversation would have happened in prep anyway. But you know, the designer would give us the vision that they want, and we will try to make sure that we can fulfill that. Have I missed anything?
That sounds great to me.
So then when you're on set, you're kind of, you have to, you know, communicate with like sound, hair and makeup, props department, the ADs, the directors, to kind of like, so we've all got a vision, and we're trying to, you know, work a goal.
So I don't know. So is the designer, the main designer, is that chosen by the director or the production? And are they chosen specifically based on maybe their style? Or
sometimes. I mean, I think a lot of bigger jobs, designers are chosen because of their past work.
Okay.
And I guess, you know, a lot of the larger jobs, I think there's about 4 designers that seem to do a lot of the larger jobs at the moment, because of their work previously has led them up until that point. So that I think, you know, producers will know that the project will be safe in their hands, especially huge projects. But yeah, I think on slightly smaller projects, it definitely is like producers and directors as well as like, you know, that will kind of be like, okay, actually, I've seen their work previously. Does it work with this? Can we, you know, can we help nurture that? I don't know. I feel like on smaller projects, there can sometimes be a bit more of a collaboration there as well. And like, I think that sometimes it could be a lot more of that person's vision. But yeah, but I definitely think it's down to a lot of their past work. But, you know, everybody needs a starting place. So sometimes people just take a chance on someone.
How long have you guys been doing what you're doing?
I have been doing this. Well, it's weird because I can't say I've been doing this for 8 years, but I've been working in costume about 8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, since 2013. Mm-hmm. That's why it is, yeah.
Yeah. How about Yuri?
So I started in 2014. Mm-hmm. That's 7 years.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you're going to ask a question next, but my route into costume was I did a costume degree, but it was a costume making degree because I didn't even realize that there was such thing as costume standby. I just didn't make clothes. So I did that and I graduated in 2014, but then as soon as I graduated, I went into theater and I did like a year and a half of theater and like opera work. And then I went into TV, but actually even before uni, I wanted to be a doctor. So I actually studied like chemistry, biology. Like I did some crazy shift into the crazy world. And I'm so happy I did. But my dream job was to always work on a job with kids, and I'm working on a job with kids now. I wanted to try and connect the two somehow, but
how did you go from like what wanting to work in the science, like in a different department to or career, to then discovering or working in
so weird. It started as when I was at college, I was doing science subjects, and on the day that I started college, I was like, oh, I think I need to do something more creative, like as a subject to do that I wouldn't have to worry too much about. And I just decided to do art. Had never drawn in my life, not a very good painter at all. But I spoke to the art tutor, and she's like, yeah, we can try and make it work with textiles. They'd never had anybody who'd sewn on their course before, but they, you know, when you have that one tutor or teacher who literally just saved your life, this is admirable. Made this like course work for me, and it was the best thing. And then what happened is that I just ended up getting really good grades in art. And then I thought, maybe I shouldn't be doing science. And I still applied to medicine at Leeds and stuff, but I did the art foundation route. So I went to ended up going to London College of Fashion to do a costume production kind of foundation course. And then I went into drama school, and then I did the costume course there.
How did that come about for you, Jada Simone?
Mine was completely different again. But I feel like everybody's journey into costume is kind of not a straight line. So my grandma taught me to sew in my early teens. And I kind of just took that and was like, oh, I'm just going to run with it. So I just used to make presents for people or make clothes for friends and myself and just experiment. And I wouldn't call myself a seamstress or a tailor at all. Yeah. But I was just kind of found this freedom in being able to sew what I wanted. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, okay. And then you kind of work out how clothing is put together as well, if you experiment that way. And then you can use patterns to create. So I was doing that in my teens, but I was studying performing arts at college. And then after college, I wanted to be a TV presenter. So I went to college, I went to uni to study television journalism.
Okay.
And while I was there, I was like, oh, it's kind of cool that I could do other things. So like I learned how to edit, direct, like, do you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
how things worked behind the scenes. And I was just like, actually, I feel like I like the behind the scenes as well. Like I know everybody sees me as a big character, but there was so much behind the scenes that I just like to know how things work. Mm-hmm. So when I left, I went straight into working in TV in production as a researcher. So I had a internship at RDF Television, which I worked there for a good couple of years. And then I feel like my trajectory kind of went very factual entertainment. A lot of the jobs that I worked on was factual entertainment. And I was kind of like, ooh, this isn't me at all. Like, I was good at it. I was able to get people to be on the shows and do all this. But I was like, I am like, my creativity here is like starting to dwindle. I didn't say this before, but I have been a dancer for most of my life. So I started dancing, doing ballet at the age of 2. Then I moved into like hip hop, African contemporary. So I was doing that alongside the work in TV and in TV and production. And about 2.5 years in, I kind of was like, this is not for me. I just need to stop because I will keep getting jobs. And I'm just getting further and further away from what I feel like I should be doing. So I basically stopped going to interviews for TV and I started working as a charity fundraiser on the streets of London, which was probably like, up to this day, the hardest job I've ever done.
Oh, yeah.
because, yeah, the rejection, like, but it gives you a very thick skin. So after that, any interview that I went to, I got. But I was luckily given the opportunity to work on Big Brother's Little Brother.
Big Brother!
By this amazing... lady called Angela Ferreira, who at the time was like quite high up in Channel 4. My dad's a postman and she lives on my dad's walk. So she basically, my dad was like her local postie and my dad was like, my daughter's trying to get into TV. And she was like, tell her to email me. And that's how I got in that way. And I worked on Big Brother's Little Brother. It happened to be the year with the whole racism row, Shilpa Shetty situation, which was very intense for my first way into TV. And I was like,
you were born to be in
those
spaces.
I was just like, you know, like I feel like you learn so much in those sort of spaces, in those environments. But again, I kind of was like, I don't think this is where I'm meant to be. So I was part of the Royal Television Society and I used to get emails from them all the time. And there was one email that came through about creative arts in TV. And I was like, maybe it's a way I can find to meld the arts with my degree. And I went to this this event and I met this amazing woman who worked in costume called Charmaine Parham. And she was the only other black person in the room. And like, I think we kind of did the dance of like trying to not avoid each other, but like, not immediately go to the other only black person. So we kind of did this whole dance around the room and then we ended up in the same queue to speak to a costume designer actually. At that point I'd started making costumes for my friends in dance theater, kind of using my skill set and helping people out there. So when I met her, she was just like, I'm transitioning from assisting into designing and I need an assistant. Right. And I was like, well, I would love to assist. And that is where that kind of started. So by that time, I was not doing researching anymore. I was kind of like just coasting, wasn't really sure what I wanted to do, but I really gravitated towards it. And we worked on like music videos together and some short films and some commercials and stuff like that. And then it happened so that she was assisting on this huge TV show. And she was just like, do you want to come in as a daily? At that point, I had no idea what a daily was. I had just been assisting her. I was just like, okay. And she, you know, I built up a kit, like a standby kit, I guess, from working with her for about over a year. And then I just jumped on that job, and from there just continued really working in that
department. So, wow. Very, amazing.
Very like.
Wow. It feels, very like a journey, but which basically ties into my next question, because I was assuming there might be like a typical route to entry for your industry. Just like for mine, for example, I did computer animation at university, and then usually there's a sort of route to take. Like you start off as a runner, and then you'd work your way up as a runner, and then you work yourself into a department. Do you think both your journeys is similar to what people typically go through, or is there a set path to your department? So, do you think there's a set? Yeah.
So, yes, I mean, there is a kind of an order to the madness. Mm-hmm. So we do have a trainee, and then we have like a costume assistant or a junior, and then you kind of step into standby, where you're probably more like a crowd standby, mm-hmm. and then you go into principal standby, mm-hmm. and then you would go into like truck supervising, and then costume supervising, mm-hmm. and then you will step into like crowd supervising, and then you'll go into what Jody Simone does now, assistant designing, then designer. But then that is just the route if you're going to be on set.
Right.
There is a whole other world of costume that we haven't even tapped into. There's the other people behind the scenes that really do a lot of what you see with the actual making of the costumes.
Okay.
Makers, breakdown. Yeah.
Yeah. So costume breakdown, makers, tailors, like jewelry makers, or fitters, like all those people which like actually do what we actually see. So that's a whole other world, and mm-hmm. they also have a journey of like trainee tailors. Then you have like the head cutter and you know, the supervisor, the managers of that whole kind of network as well. So
yeah.
Typically you would come into it as a trainee.
Yeah.
But then there are trainees that just want to end at standby, but then there's mm-hmm. also trainees that want to be a designer.
I definitely think I agree with you, Ria. I think there is definitely like a way to do mm-hmm. it, traditional way of doing it. But I find that I have found specifically mm-hmm. like a lot of people of color, have gone in at very different routes.
Okay.
To
the other people that I've spoken to. You know, I know a lot of designers who transitioned from fashion, and they were never a standby. They transitioned from fashion into TV and film, straight into design, or straight in as a supervisor or assistant designer, and then worked up that way. You know, if you have studied tailoring, again, it might be an easier transition to transition from tailoring on Savile Row to tailoring in film, because, you know, it's very similar. You know, a lot of people who do illustration can transition into costume illustration.
Right.
Textile.
Yeah, into textile. So I feel like there is very, very different routes. But the typical way is, as Rihanna said, you know, you come in as a trainee and la la. But I guess in my way, as Rhi said, when you kind of get in as a crowd standby, and I came straight in from assisting a designer into crowd standby. So I kind of skipped over the trainee situation. But when I was working in production, I was a runner for, like, do you know what I mean, 6 months before I went in as a researcher.
So
I think it's a, you know, you have that that meeting of skills as well. And I think a lot of for the on-set crew especially, a lot of the skills also have to do with like how you deal with people. Because as a standby, if you're not good with people, your job is going to be very difficult, you know? Right. But definitely, I feel like, I personally feel like, you know, people who are studying fashion probably don't think about TV or film or costume as a career. But there's so many transferable skills that would work well in the costume industry if, yeah. if you studied fashion. It's yeah. very different, I think, but I definitely think that yeah. there's transferable skills. And I think it's a career that some people don't think about because I think fashion feels very glitz and glam
yeah.
and costume not so much. But actually, I think that there's a lot of wealth in costume as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So just to give you guys some credit, can you just tell us some of the films that you've worked on and been part of?
Oh gosh, I rarely work on film. Let me just yeah. say that. But I have worked on The Royals, Humans, I guess, Called a Midwife. I'm trying to think. You know what
it's
I mean?
Hard, like, hard when you get.
It's actually hard, man.
Yeah.
Small Axe.
Yeah, I was gonna say Small Axe. Small Axe. You know, people are gonna be upset. They're gonna be like, "You didn't even say the thing." I worked on Hannah recently.
Hannah 2?
Hannah, yeah, it's season 3 for Amazon.
Oh, cool. I worked on season 2.
Oh!
Yeah.
Season 2.
Yeah.
I've gone blank, but...
Yeah, of course.
but I've worked on stuff. Yay.
Yeah.
Go for it. Take over, please.
It's hard. So actually, Jodie Simone and I met on Called Midwife, but we actually knew each other through Instagram. It's just mm-hmm. the technology.
Yeah, very weird.
Our story is quite insane, actually. But I've only just started working in film, but I want to go in between the two. Like, you can as a freelancer, so it's fab. Film is just sometimes a lot longer contract, so mm-hmm. yeah, that's the only difference really. But I started off in TV, like soap TV, so I did like Emmerdale, Coronation Street, EastEnders, Holby City, that kind of world. And then I started doing a bit more drama, so I did I've done like DCI Banks, done all the crime stuff, done Informer, I've done oh my gosh, mind's
gone. Told you.
Yeah. Oh my god.
I'm like, just yeah. check the IMDb. Don't worry. Check the IMDb.
Unforgotten, that's the last one. Then I stepped into the Called Midwife world, How I Met Jodie Simone. And I did that a couple of years in a row, actually. Dabbled back into Emmerdale in between. Worked on Yardie, worked on Dunkirk, The Postcard Killings. I did like a day on Small Axe again with Jodie Simone. I have worked, I did Fantastic Beasts last year during COVID. Currently filming a great Netflix musical, which I don't think I can say, but it'll be great.
The Witches, which we both worked on.
Oh yeah, God, yeah, I did The Witches. Thank you. It's crazy, isn't it? That's how you know when you just go from job to job. It's just organic. And then you meet great people, you know, and then it just, I can remember the days when I first started out and I was like, am I going to get my next job? And then suddenly just seems to fall, like it just seems to come to you, which is great, really good.
Definitely, amazing. So I was going to ask you guys, because it might vary for both of you, I was wondering costumes for film versus TV, which you both prefer. But I guess you guys, like you said, you just don't really mind because you're switching between.
For me, I don't mind.
Yeah.
I don't mind it.
No, yeah. I don't. I think the only difference as a standby from film to TV is that TV is a lot more hands-on and you can get a lot involved. I feel like maybe you could be a bit more creative as a standby in TV because it's such a smaller team that the designer kind of needs your help in a way. And usually because the team's so small, the designer or supervisor will pick a team that they really trust. So you get given that responsibility. Whereas a film is such a big team, you only really look after one or two people. That costume is already set. It kind of comes to you and you don't really, can't really do much to it. Yeah. If there's a problem with the costume, it goes back to the workroom. Whereas in TV, there's nobody else. So I think, you know, it kind of depends on where you want to go with it and how involved you want to be. And in that sense, I think Jodie Smith, I think it was similar. We like to be hands-on. Probably why we like standby as well. Yeah. That people kind of hands-on, problem solving kind of world.
Interesting. You've already touched on my next question, which is basically I was wondering when you are normally brought on a show and how long you usually stay on a show, but I guess that varies on film and TV. So, and you've already touched on that. So yeah, I think the next question was, how intense are your departments on a day to day basis?
I kind of want to say very intense, especially in the beginning. In the beginning of a project, and right at the start. When we first start filming, it can be very intense. I just think our department can be very intense because you've always got to be on your A game. And I mean, we're also humans and sometimes there's human error. Things happen on set, as Ree said, I was on set on a show and one of the characters walked out of the car and hit the whole back of his trousers split, down. And, you know, at that point, we were half an hour away from the base. So he needs to get changed and I need to sew up those trousers. Yeah. And it's very intense because you're like, we've got like a schedule of things that we need to do today. People don't have time to be waiting an hour for you to do stuff. So, you know, you need to be very quick, very hands-on. And I think that the costume department is always like working cyclically, if you know what I mean. So, you know, as things are being filmed, other things are being prepared at the same time. So it's constantly moving like this. Then things go onto screen. Other things are being prepared in the back. So like for me at the moment, you know, we are this week going to be filming the specific big scene. But I'm already prepping the next week's one. So I think it's very cyclical, but very nonstop, I would say. I don't know what you think, Ree.
No, I completely agree. I was also going to mention like how like the costume supervisor is kind of that person to kind of think 10 times ahead sometimes. There's like a link, which I think is a supervisor, to kind of like remind the designer, okay, you need to be thinking about this now, you need to be shopping for this, but then also like saying to standby, you know, you've got to worry about this today, but tomorrow you've got this big scene, so are you ready for that kind of thing. It is always intense. I think not trying to put other departments down, but I just feel like sometimes the ADs, they don't seem to schedule for mistakes or problems in the schedule on a day-to-day basis.
I agree. And
I know that they're working on a hard schedule and it's all about money. It is like they need to get it done in the time. But if we just had, I think they try to cram so much in. And it can be stressful. And like, you know, Jodie Swain said, you need to be so good when you're a standby, like as in be prepared for those miss ups and like, you know, not get stressed. You'd like calm, have backup solutions, have a really good kit, have a good team, a supportive team as well, you know, like to help you. You just need to be really, it takes a certain person to be a standby, I think. And another thing to mention with our roles is that because we do checks before they perform, we have to, like, we're the last person that they see. So our energy needs to be really on form. Usually both of us will have radios on and we can hear all the stuff going on, but we cannot transfer that energy to the cast because they need to like probably go and cry now in their seat or be angry or whatever. So there's quite a lot to manage. I feel like we need counsellors sometimes.
No, but actually, because it is a lot. I think you're so right, Ree. Like, we are the last people that, as a standby, you're the last person the actor interacts with before they start performing. If you're like on edge and like, you know that all this stuff's happening and you genuinely can't show that. You just have to be like calm, cool, collected. Because if you are on edge, they then become on edge and they are able to perform in the way that they need to. So yeah, it is that. But I definitely think, like, you know, exactly what you're saying, Ree, is like, mental health is also very important. And, you know, we have to remember that we are only human and we can only move so fast and do so much when we are working, you know, quite long hours and stuff like that. So it is, you know, amazing. And sometimes there's the glitz and glam, but we also need to bear that in mind that we are also people.
Yeah, of course.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. On a day-to-day basis, how much time do you spend either creating costumes from scratch or altering existing ones?
So, like, depending on the size of the film or the TV show, like with this film I'm on now, a lot of it is being made. They've been on it for like 5 months before I even started.
Yeah.
But we do have places like hiring costume houses. And designers use them a lot. Jodie Smith could talk more about that as well. But like, we do try and use what's already out there. One, because of like money and budget, but two, so that we could be resourceful, like, and save the environment somehow. We're trying.
Yeah.
But when things are really, really creative and we just can't find it anywhere, then you have to pay someone to make it. And then we do, on bigger shows, you do have an alteration department. Those things that come from costumes that come from hiring companies, we can make it fit, you know, certain cast members and stuff. And I think we usually get more hired costumes for crowd, I feel. And then some designers also shop in charity shops as well, just to try and make things look worn. You might as well just go and buy it from a charity shop, because that's your costume. That's what makes us different to fashion, because it is really like, it is on a person, it's character. Real.
Yeah.
It's been somebody's, it's supposed to be in somebody's cupboard for years, you know? So, but I think Jodie Spohn could talk more about that anyway, because she's.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I can speak a little bit from my design experience, I guess, which, as I said, has only been over the past maybe 2 years-ish. But for me, the different projects, so when I worked in theatre, dance theatre specifically, I made a lot of those costumes from scratch. One of the first things I ever worked on, I made a complete mirror suit, which was crazy because I hadn't had the experience to kind of plan it out. But it was one of those things where, you know, you have no choice to, because you can't buy that in the shop. Yeah. Somebody says, we want a mirror suit because we're going to do a light show, a laser light show, and we want the lights to bounce off this costume. You can't just go to H&M. You know what I mean?
Wish.
You know what I mean? So it's like, you have to think and make stuff. And I mean, I worked on a really cool music video for Rally Ritchie called Aristocrats, which got nominated for a UK Music Video Award, but we lost to Beyonce, so we're not going to talk about that. On that video, it was 7 periods, like a family photo, basically, that moved through seven different periods. And a lot of that was hired, but then, you know, we had to do like alterations. Some of it we had to create and make. A lot of for the punk section, a lot of that was purchased. We went to Camden, we were altering stuff, painting jackets. So I definitely think it's, you know, different projects. If it's something that's quite contemporary, a lot of the time is a lot of buying. But for example, the project that I'm on now, a lot of it is contemporary, so we're buying a lot of things. But there is the thing of also stunts. So we need repeats. And sometimes, you know, if you go to, for example, a charity shop, as we said, and shop there, you might find the exact thing that you need. Yeah. But there's not going to be doubles for, you know, for them to have repeats, and their stunt doubles and their driving doubles to have repeats. So then it might be that you use that as a template for a tailor or a seamstress to make that for you. So I definitely think it depends on the project. But I think usually it's a balance of the two, because I don't think you can buy everything. There's always going to have to be some form of alteration, because it might be that, you know, you get something that is like the perfect color, but then when the artist or actor puts it on, it's just like, this doesn't fit the way I need it to fit. So you're cutting bits and sewing, and you know what I mean? So I definitely think it depends on the project, but a lot of the time I think it's both. I think you can buy, but you also need to do alterations and making as well.
Yeah. So what usually happens with costumes after a show? Are they archived or are they sold on?
So a lot of the time they are archived. Mm-hmm. So I mean, for example, on Call the Midwife, we have a section in Angels, which is a hiring and making company, where we just store all of our costumes so that other period shows can't use them. Because another actual issue that some designers come across is you're not sharing costumes between different shows, and everyone goes, oh, I saw that on The Crown, and it's like, did you? So that really helps other designers when they're pulling in the hiring, like that, you know, don't use that because that's been seen somewhere else. A lot of the time we do things like a costume sale, which is great. Costumes that never got worn, and then all the crew can just buy. Money goes back into the system somehow. The budget. Also cast members, like, they actually like to buy some of their stuff, or some designers gift it as well, like especially if there's doubles and there's multiples, you might as well give them away. But in answer to the question, there's a lot of costumes in storage, basically.
I think they embargo a lot of costumes stay in embargo for a certain period of time, and then after that I think that they can release them. Sometimes it's a couple of years, you know. But I mean, for me, when I've been working on a lot of like short films and stuff recently, I do try to hold on to things until the film is out. Just in case they need to do pickups and stuff like that, which is currently happening to me at the moment. One of the short films I worked on needs to have a pickup day, and one of the jackets was a personal item. It was my own personal jacket that I used.
It's in Berlin.
It was in Berlin currently. So that's fun. So I've got to try and get it back for the pickup days. But we have a pickup day is happening. So you never know, it might not be for a good couple months, but I need to get it back to life. And just everybody pray for me, because that jacket is a one of a one of a one. But like, even like this, that I'm wearing, this robe that I'm wearing, I got off a t-shirt I worked on. When I was working on Small Axe, we did a costume sale as well. And I got loads of really cool 1970s pieces that you just wouldn't find anywhere else. But I do think costume sales are amazing, because otherwise a lot of it, we give a lot to charity as well. If it's just stuff that we won't need that was used on crowd, that often can go to charity shops. But I think costume sales are great. But a lot of it gets embargoed for a good while. Especially moving, if it's a TV show that moves through different seasons as well. So for example, say you finish on season two, a lot of that stuff has to get put on hold because if there's a third season, they might need some of that same costume, or yeah, so that's kind of kept until, the end of the third season, and then maybe what was used for the second season can then go.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. In terms of diversification, how diversified is your industry or department, either as
I will say not very.
Right. I mean, yeah, in terms of like race and sex, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I will say is that our department is heavily female dominated, which I guess in some ways, in a lot of ways, doesn't work to our best interest because I think a lot of the female dominated and led departments aren't taken, this is my personal opinion, as importantly or seriously as other departments can be on set. So that's us and hair and makeup, I think a lot of the time aren't given a lot of more consideration than other departments. But that's just me. Some people may not agree with that. But in terms of diversity, in terms of female to male, we have a lot of females in our department. Although there are males as well. So if you are a man that would like to do costume, come on board. But in terms of diversity, in terms of ethnically diverse, I think the department is lacking
Thank you.
across the board. I would say I've worked on a lot of teams that I've been the only diverse person, or one of two. I just don't think that there's a lot of us in our industry. However, obviously, as like we started the Black Costume Network, so now we're able to see, that there's at least 100, I would say. Got 90 people in the Black Costume Network, but I'd say there's probably at least 100 people that work in the UK TV and film industry that are Black and mixed race. And I mean, I know quite a few people from an Asian backgrounds as well, but there's not, it's very, very few and far between. That's just my honest opinion. I don't know about you, what you think, Ree.
No, yeah, I agree. I agree. It is that no, which is why the Black Costume Network was formed. Find each other, literally. But yeah.
It might be probably my best time for me to ask you about what the Black Costume Network is about and why you felt the need to create it, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Okay, so for the longest time, it's actually our first birthday today. I don't know when this is going to go out, but it's the Black Costume Network's first birthday today. A year ago, on the 13th of June, we first started the WhatsApp group, which had under 20 people in it. Because at the time we didn't really know many other Black or mixed race people that worked in the costume department. Now the reason why it was created was initially created as a safer space for us to kind of let out our thoughts and feelings about what was happening in the world, because when we started it was in the kind of height of the Black Lives Matter movement and what happened with George Floyd, as well as the pandemic shutting down our industry basically. So for a while I'd kind of spoken to who I'm working with at the moment about we were thinking how should we like meet up with some of the other Black people we know in costume just to kind of talk about our experiences. But I think at that point it was just like, no, we need to do this now. Like it just kind of felt a bit more urgent because I kind of felt like I was seeing a lot of people on social media that were saying stuff, or I was putting things up on my social media, and I was very, very vocal with my feelings about what's happening at the time. And a lot of people were DMing me and saying, I agree, but they weren't, didn't feel comfortable or safe to put those thoughts or feelings on their social media. So I just thought, you know, let's create a safe space where we can just talk and openly about our experiences. And, you know, we held a Zoom on like the 17th of June last year, and there was maybe like 22 to 25 of us. There wasn't that many. Well, actually, for us, that was like, oh my God, there's more than 20 people. We can't believe it. We like, it was very, it was actually really emotional. Mm. Yeah, it was emotional. Yeah, I definitely cried. Like,
oh my God.
I definitely cried.
Yeah, where have they been all our lives? Yeah. Like, literally.
Where have you been? Like,
last 6 years at that point, or 7 years of our costume career, we hadn't known these people.
We couldn't believe it. So, and you know, and then people were sharing stories of their experiences, like good and bad, in the industry. But it felt very cathartic to share that space with people who look like you and share similar experiences. And I wouldn't say that we're not a monolith, you know, as you know, like all Black people, we're not one, like, just because, you know, we've all come from different walks of life, different experiences, different heritage. But I just think there's that common ground, and I feel like that community spirit is something that, you know, a lot of us have had within our heritage and our lineage for years. Yeah. And I feel like oftentimes when you're classed as the minority, even though we are the global majority, in these spaces, when you're the minority, often the community is quite fragmented. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of the time we were kind of, people in our industry were pitted against each other, or it's like, oh, well, there's only going to be one. We can only have one, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was like, now we've moved from a space of, I guess, lack to a space of abundance and community. And like, you know, today we can sit here, me and Rian sit here and say that we've got 90 people in the Black Costume Network. And that is all encompassing. The designers, supervisors, tailors, jewelry makers, workwear, dyers, you know what I mean, standbys, trainees, like leather workers, all encompassing. And it is the most beautiful thing to see and support, being able to support each other and have, and know that if anything does happen, you have 89 people behind you, you know, whereas before we kind of were in these spaces alone, like, you know, so as I say, it's one of those things I think that's quite overwhelming. I think it's important. I know there's a shift in our industry as well, because sometimes, although I was the only diverse person on my team, there might have been one other person in another department, and I'm seeing on sets more that there's more diversity, more women in male-led departments, you know what I mean. I've seen a lot of like female sparks and female sound and camera, and you know, I've seen a lot of diverse people, like from all walks of life, you know what I mean. Even like for example with different like disabilities and just diverse in general. And I think what I would just like to say before I hand over to Ree is that the Black Costume Network, yes, we amplify the voices of Black and mixed race costumers, but we are here to stand for diversity within our industry, full stop.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. We can obviously only speak from our experience, but I think, you know, when people say like, if you lift the people who I guess are seen sometimes at the bottom, then everybody else is also blessed. Do you know what I mean? So I think by us amplifying our voices, we're also able to help amplify other people who are minority as well in this industry. So, but yeah, I'll hand over to Ree as well. Who's like, I couldn't have done this without Rihanna. Like, honestly, like, I just couldn't have done it. We basically, it's a job. It's a job. It's a second job we've taken on that we didn't think was going to be a job, you know? So, yeah, I'll hand over to Rita to
continue. Yeah, no, thanks, Jodie Simone. The founder down here is amazing. but I just, literally just to echo everything that she had said, but I think to kind of talk about how the Black Costume Network is functioning now, which we didn't know it was going to function, it is kind of like an agency, which is where the whole second job type thing comes into it. Okay. So it's now become a great place for networking. So, you know, like all these 90 people didn't know about each other. Now they're hiring each other and we're getting out there and we are owning these spaces and we've got a fully diverse team. That's one great thing. Two, we've got producers approaching us looking for designers. Okay. And these opportunities wouldn't have been given to us before, not so easily. I mean, we do have a long way to go, but they are coming to us. They do want a Black leader in their team. So we are trying to help them in getting diversity at the top. A lot of the time, a lot of people come to us looking for trainees and we're like, hey, we've got all these other people that. So I think that's also the great thing about the network is we've got loads of people in leadership in the group. So we kind of run a job post system and producers and HODs will come to us and then we would send out a job post to the rest of the network and then basically get people work. Mm-hmm. And like we said, it was our birthday today and everybody on the network was busy working, which is great.
Had
people that have come over here from overseas and they've just gotten a job like straight away. And I think I'm not saying it's not all just down to the BCN. I think obviously there's been a shift this whole year and last year in people realizing that there was a problem. The problem's been here for ages, but now we've got a platform to speak about it. It's just booming and people are getting work. And you know, it would be lovely for the Black Kosh network not really having to be here in 10 years time, because everyone knows each other and we're just in the, we don't need a job posting system. It would just remain a network for us and like a great place for us to have our resources. So yeah, that's our vision. And on top of that, well, which is why we're here doing this podcast, is we want to go into schools and we want to get the young people to know that there is a place for them. And eventually when they get there, it will be safe. Like, we want it to be a safe space for them. Yeah. We don't want them to go through all the rubbish that we are going through now. Yeah. And so we do hold school talks. And our aim really is to get to the kids before college, because we find that in the colleges there's not many diverse kids, so the issue way before then. We need to get them before they decide their A-levels, before they go to uni. And also I think another thing is, like, again, the exposure. You know, lots of fashion designers don't know about costume the same way you know, my parents didn't know about costumes, so they wouldn't have told me that I could do that. So also getting to the parents and the guardians and kind of like telling them, hey, you know, if you've got a creative child, like there's so much they can do. Like, don't tell them they can't do it and there's no money in it, because
there's people making a lot of money in this industry.
And obviously money's not everything, but I think, you know, culturally for us, you know, our grandparents or parents come here, they want the best for their kids. And they get kind of worried when they step into a creative world, because it's seen as a struggle. Yeah. we're just trying to make the space for them, paving the way for the younger generation to just come in easily, you know?
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I wish my wife was here, because she also has a similar story where she's from the Asian community, but she's also has a story where her parents or her mom didn't want her to pursue her fashion degree because they deemed it as not viable in the future.
And I get it. Like I said, you know, you've come here and you want your kids to do really well, and it's like you just push them into like accounting or doctor or lawyer and
nursing,
you know. And and there's a whole world out here, you know.
Yeah,
that is great. And also, like, you know, just thinking about all the other departments, not just costume, like sound, for example, people could be really good at music and they can tap into sound in film and TV, but they don't know about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, these podcasts are great, you know, for kind of seeing. Yeah.
And even what you're doing, like, for example, even you, do you know what I mean? It's like for people to be able to see you in this industry as well. I think it's really, really important.
Yeah.
Like, representation is everything, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I can attest because it's also similar in my industry. And a lot of these days I'm just literally speaking to people or coming across people, and we're on LinkedIn DMs and literally just sharing profiles of people that look like us, and it's like it's just the representation that makes everything so worth it. It's just seeing someone that looks like you, and it's just
100%. And I think, like, kind of piggybacking off what Ree said as well, is that we've started doing, you know, trainee workshops as well within the network, so that when people are coming in at entry level, they have a base level of knowledge about what is expected of them, what they should have in their kits, and also to just let them know that they're being supported, because it can often, as you said, is often difficult just getting your foot in the door. So if your foot's in, now how do you stay in the industry? Because I think a lot of the time, because our industry hasn't been diverse or hasn't been safe in at certain times, people leave the industry. So they come in, they're like, "Woo, I don't think I belong here." So I'm just gonna, you know, like that Homer meme when he just steps into the bush, like I think genuinely. And I mean, even at one point I was just like, I don't know, is this for me? You know, and I'm very proud of every single person who has stayed within this industry and been able to make a footing. And I'm also proud of the people who were here before me and Ree even got into this industry and was able to, like, stay there, you know what I mean, and make waves and put up with a lot of the nonsense that was happening in order for us to be able to come in, you know, because if they weren't there, we wouldn't even exist. Do you know what I mean? I think it's very, very, very important to acknowledge that as well.
I think, you guys are doing amazing things. It's great.
You too.
Thank you. My next question is, what do fashion designers think about you guys, or vice versa?
I mean, do you know what? Sometimes I wonder if, like, they're fully aware of us. But I know that recently there's been a whole uproar with what happened with Cruella. I'm not sure if you guys have heard, but a lot of the time as well, I think vice versa, I could even obviously speak for costume. A lot of the time we are designing, and sometimes it is fashion. We are giving you looks, like, do you know what I mean? And I think oftentimes people don't hold a costume up in as high esteem as you would, like, a fashion designer or a fashion brand. But I think, you know, what has been seen with Cruella is that, like, there's a lot of amazing fashion looks there, which was created by a costume designer. So I think there is a lot of transferable skills. And I think actually we should look at each other as, like, kind of like cousins. And it's just being like, you know, there are people who transition from fashion into costume. There's not many who transition the other way around, I find, necessarily. But I believe that there's so many transferable skills. And I think there's so many similarities there in terms of the creativity that actually there shouldn't be any animosity there at all. It should just be like, oh, I see what you're doing. Because we have to be able to appreciate it. A lot of the time on mood boards, like, you know, we put fashion on our mood boards when we're building a character. You know, we're putting fashion brands and we're putting, you know what I mean? We're not just pulling from real life people and images from books and photography, we're also pulling from fashion magazines as well and things like that to build on the characters. So and a lot of the time we incorporate high-end brands into what we do as well. So I don't know, Ree, what do you think?
Yeah, no, actually, that's a good point. You said sometimes you could, what's the word? When you're kind of, when you you email some brands and they kind of like help you out and they loan some.
Yeah, PR.
That's it. My mind went blank. But yeah, there's a connection there, you know. And I think I agree with you. We're just like cousins. I don't have anything more to say on that one.
Yeah. So would you say you'd be, if you chose to, would you be able to transition into fashion, or would you want to in the first place? Do you think?
I wouldn't. I feel like I do love where I'm at in costume. I think that fashion can sometimes feel a little bit restricting in areas. This is my personal opinion. Whereas I think in costume, you know, if you're building in a world that doesn't actually exist, you're able to really fully create. But as I said, you know, we do take a lot of inspiration from a red fashion as well. But I personally wouldn't want to transition into fashion as an industry. I don't think it's well paid enough, especially at the bottom. If you're starting, I feel like the costume industry feels like it's a lot more well paid. And I think even though the TV and film industry has its problems, I personally feel that some of the working environments are a bit more safe than fashion, from my personal experience. Anyway.
Yeah, so my next question is, does one need a fashion degree to be a costume designer for film and TV?
Nope. Yeah. I don't even know if there's anything else that needs to be said of that. I guess it's just...
Yeah. So what's your best show to date for either of you?
Do you know what? I don't know if we're going to get in trouble for saying, I don't know.
Okay, sure.
I mean, I think I've had different favorites for different reasons. I really enjoyed working on Blue Story, even though it was mad.
Okay.
I think every single one of the projects I've designed, a lot of them haven't come out yet, which is
sure.
I would love to be like, oh my God, this. But for me, I think one of the things that was career changing, I think for me, was working on Small Axe, which was insane for me to be able to be on a project like that, that was kind of about my own heritage in a way. You know, working on a set with so many amazing Black British actors and actresses, being able to watch Steve McQueen in action, you know, being able to work with Lisa Duncan as a designer, and see so many more diverse people on set. It was just one of the most beautiful, crazy experiences. I'm not gonna lie, it was not an easy job to do, but it was beautiful. And I think I've made lifelong friends on that job. As well as when I worked on Call the Midwife and I met Rihanna for the first time. But I mean, as I said, in terms of TV, film, those jobs, but I think for me personally, the Rally Ritchie video that I did, I think for me, always stands in my mind and in my heart as a video that I really pushed myself to my limits. And I'd never designed in period costume before, and I think a lot of the time as well, it's very rare that Black people work in period costume. And the fact that it was a music video allowed me a bit more creative scope and not have to fully, obviously I wanted everything to be period correct, but I was able to be like, okay, do you know what? I'm going to put this woman in a men's jacket and I'm going to put a belt around it and I'm going to give her a handbag where she may not have had, do you know what I mean? I was able to really explore within those periods. And I'm very grateful for that project. So I think for me, definitely Small Axe and Aristocrats for me, been the two really important jobs I've worked on.
Yeah. How about you, Ree?
So I think for me, I think there's a reason why I did it 2 years in a row would have to be Call the Midwife. now, the costume team were just incredible. It's like a great group of women. And because the job is such a long job, it's like 10 months, you end up getting really involved with your team. I think Jodie Simone can agree with me on this. And so we all had a lot of stuff going on in our lives at the time. And I think it was a very beautiful to have a team that can really support you through those hard times. But also the script on Call the Midwife is really like heart-wrenching. And it just reminds you of how amazing women are. And it's just got a beautiful script. And so I loved working on it. And it's a mad job because the hours are like probably the longest job. Because they do like 8 to 8 filming. But it was so worth it.
Yeah.
So I think that's my highlight. And then my second would be the job that I'm on now, only because there's loads of kids involved. Mm-hmm. But let's see how that ends.
So I don't know how to put it. I'm just wondering have you had any worst days on set? Basically, of course, because being freelancers, especially for me as well, there are certain days where I may have a crazy shot, for example, especially because being a freelancer, you're given the craziest and most difficult shots to do. And you might find yourself not being struggling to work on a shot. And then you just stress so much. So do you guys go through moments where you may, for example, have a day where you have to, you're tasked to do something where you may be struggling to do it or trying to bring it to fruition? Do you go through periods like that, or would you say not as much?
Are you pointing at me, Ray?
I was, yeah, because I was like, oh my gosh, there's like almost every day.
Yeah.
I think every day there's something else stressful.
Every day there's something that we get faced with.
Yeah.
I think the more experience you have, the more you kind of go, it's fine, it's not the end of the world. And I think that's what I've learned over my career, is like there's certain things that I'm really not worried about. So you know, for example, I had a moment in a film where one of the girls had lost her earrings and it was vintage and we didn't have a double. And before, I would have been stressing, I would have told everybody, but I knew that in that angle that we were filming, like we were on her at that point, we wouldn't have seen the other earring that was missing. Mm-hmm. And that all comes with experience. Like I just know that they were going to cut it in a certain way that it wouldn't really matter too tough until I found that earring. Oh my God, I had everyone looking for that earring and we found it in the snow outside. But like, that's a very stressful moment because we had a whole 6 months left to film this scene and her earring was missing. Like, but then again, with experience, I was like, okay, what can I get away with? I just kept swapping the earring round, depending on which way we were, until I found it. That's just an example of like things that go missing all the time. Cast always forget things as well, like all the time, so we are like childminders. Some of the cars, so sometimes they forget things and it's like an hour's drive to location and you're like, where's your gloves? We need the gloves. Yeah. Like stuff like that, and you have to think on the spot. I think it's every day there's something.
Yeah, sure, okay, so
I agree. I just think every day there's
assuming that you have to be very involved on a show till it wraps up, how do you manage being always on the move through different studios or countries?
Jodie Simone, she's
I guess I can speak about countries because yeah, like, I mean, This is my first time working abroad, and I guess I basically packed my whole life up essentially because I was like, I'm going to be here for 6 months. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just, it's a job. You know that it's going to end, like you're not going to be there forever. So there's that. But oftentimes as well, as a standby, you don't necessarily come at the start, and you don't finish right through to the end. Sometimes you leave before they finish wrap as well. But I definitely think that being able to travel for your job is definitely a blessing, because you get to majority of the time have weekends off where you can explore as well. Mm-hmm. And it's always nice to just, venture out in new spaces and places.
Do you feel like this affects relationships? Like, I didn't plan for this, but how do you guys manage your relationship?
He was just like, let me throw West Fana. I'll jump in before Ree, because I know that Ree's gonna have a lot to say, I guess, on this. But I would definitely say that, like, it is you have to find, it's like sirens outside. You have to find that work-life balance. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to know that, unfortunately, you may miss things. Like, you may miss someone's really important birthday.
Yep.
You may miss certain events. But also, it is a job. And if you've got to go, I unfortunately had to go to a funeral, and I had to be there. I had to be at this funeral. So it's just like, sometimes when something's really important, you're just like, well, if I'm going to get sacked, mm-hmm. I've just got to go with it because I have to be there. So, and a lot of the time I think there's a fear of being able to say, oh, I need the day off. But actually, if you need the day off, you need to tell people you need the day off, but the hours you work are crazy and long. And I think if you don't have a partner or friends and family that understand that, it can be quite difficult for you.
Yeah.
But there's definitely a way to balance it. But I think you need to be conscious of it, because we do work such long hours. And I know we don't have children ourselves, but I know for a lot of parents that work in our industry, they have to juggle and balance. And sometimes it can be really difficult. Like, mm-hmm. I've seen it be quite hard for mums to step away from their children to work on a job for a good couple of months, or, work away for a little while. But we know that there's a balance, and it's like the good thing about our industry, especially being a freelancer, is that you can, work a long job for 6 months, for example, and then take 2 months off because, you want to spend that time with your family. Yeah. Or now I think they're introducing a lot more like job sharing as well for mums, which is, I think, amazing and necessary, because I think sometimes our industry isn't that accommodating to parents, especially mums, but just in general, actually, because even men, like, do you know what I mean? I'm sure yourself, I think parents, our industry isn't that accommodating for parents, but I think now that they're doing more job sharing, and I think people are speaking out a bit more about it, I think we're able to find some sort of like middle ground. But I don't know what you think, Ree.
Yeah, do you know what? I wasn't actually going to say much more. I think. I was going to mention that since COVID, especially the film industry, I have noticed the effect of the hours and the effect that it's having on their crew. And I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but I do feel like there's a penalty that's now coming with overtime. So I think that they will probably start reducing the hours so that we can have more of an evening at home with our family. And I think if that's the route that they're going to try and go down, hopefully, then it will be better for all of us. But I think they've sussed that since COVID. And I think crew have also sussed that as well, that like being at home is much better for the body, for your energy. But in terms of relationships, um,
It's difficult to juggle it. I definitely think it's difficult to juggle it. If you don't have somebody that works in the industry, like...
Yeah.
We are like partners. Like,
yeah.
She's like my... She's like my partner. I speak to her every day, so...
Long hours. Yeah, long hours. I can imagine. It's just crazy.
For us, it would take like a real rare person to understand our thing is as well. It's like we don't just do our jobs, we do the BCN. We also like do other things. We're part of other networks and other things.
Yeah.
So it's a daily struggle.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
But it's a fun one when you've got a partner. Right?
Yeah. Just a quick question. I'm just, because you guys are freelancers, I'm just wondering, so say for example for my industry, I'm a freelancer and then there are other people that work in studios full time. So do you guys have something similar where, say for example, someone couldn't freelance, they could be full-time costume designer for a specific studio that as an employee?
Yeah. So a lot of the time that's for shows that are just continuously running. So it would be like soaps, for example. They have hired like employees. I think Jelly Smoans is fun. Hired employees that would kind of just run the course of that job, because that's like 30 years, 40 years in the industry, like BBC, ITV, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas we're kind of in the drama side of things, so our contracts are a lot shorter, so it's not really, it doesn't really work for us.
So my last few questions: what do you typically dwell on when you're deciding whether to accept a contract on a show or decline, and does it matter what the show is about?
I think before, when I first got into the industry, I was just like, I just need to take any job, because if I don't take a job, then my CV is going to be bare and I'm not going to work in this industry. But I think now, I guess, and this comes with experience, now I'm very particular about what jobs I take. If the story or the cast is not diverse, I don't want to be on the job anymore. If there's a lot of stereotyping, I won't be on the job.
Yep.
And for me, a lot of the design projects I have taken, I've specifically, I'm trying to map out a career that specifically places people of color, LGBTQ+, and you know, diverse people from diverse backgrounds in a positive light, humanizes them. And doesn't highlight stereotypes, because you know stereotypes don't come from anywhere; they exist within the fabric of society. But I think a lot of the time, when it comes to specifically Black people, you know, stereotypes are used a lot, and I think we've passed that stage now. You know, and there's so many untold stories of just people being people, that I think we need to see more of that, and that's what I want to do, and I'm willing to turn down work for that. You know what I mean? If somebody sends me a script and it doesn't align with any of those things, I'd rather not work. Do you know? You know, I think it's too important now. I really do, and I know, but you know, not everyone's going to feel the same. Sometimes you've got to do jobs for money, but I think most importantly now, anything that I do as a designer, I need it to align with my beliefs, and I'm really strong behind that.
But I think that could be a good thing as well, because then the junior that might be starting could potentially pick up what you've declined to work.
I agree. Like, I mean, I had a talk with an agent about potentially like signing with them, and I just said like, I'm not going to be a cash cow for you. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you're not going to be able to put me up for any old job, because if it doesn't align with what I think and feel, then I will turn it down. And I know that's a risky thing to say especially in the position I'm in, but a lot of the projects that I've worked on have been so high quality and have not included stereotypes and have really highlighted human stories from diverse experiences and diverse voices. And I just think I just want to be part of that change, you know. So yeah. And if I'm working as a standby, I basically need the cast to be diverse. I don't want to be on the project if it's not a diverse cast anymore. And that doesn't mean, you know, it needs to be all Black people or all Asian, or do you know what I mean? I just think, you know, I want to be on a cast, looking after cast members that are from all walks of life, because I think it adds so much to your work experience. You learn so much, and also to the show, you know. I think, you know, what we want to see on our screens, we want things to be reflective of the world that we're living in, and the world that we're living in is diverse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Everything Jodie Simone said, agreed.
Okay. So yeah, just to finalize, finish up, what advice would you give to anyone wanting to do what you guys do?
Oh, we both smiled at the same time.
We're so lame. I don't know what, I would definitely just say go for it. Like, reach out to people.
Come
and find us. Genuinely, come and find us. You know. But do it. I think the thing is, I personally think at least try it. If it's not for you, then you at least, you know, you can come out of it saying, you know, I attempted. But I think don't let fear stop you from going into the industry, because, you know, it isn't as, I guess, especially if you're from a diverse background. I think when you step into industries that aren't very diverse, often sometimes you can feel ostracized or not like you're part of the work community. I don't know. Sometimes you just don't feel fully at home. But
yeah.
Make yourself at home there. Like, make yourself at home. And I just think what we do is really important, actually. We're not, as people always say in our industry, we're not saving lives. We might not be saving lives, but in the grand scheme of things, we're working in the entertainment industry. And, you know, that actually, when you look at what happened in lockdown, did save a lot of people, because, you know, people were watching streaming services more than ever before. They were, you know, I mean, creating.
And people learn from what they see. And so we want to make sure that what they're watching is, like, good. Because they're just, some people don't watch the news, basically, and they just watch TV or film. So it's important that what's going out into people's minds is, you know.
But definitely, I would say, just actually do it. Like, just do it. And step out, regardless if you are fearful, step out on it anyway. Do you know what I mean? Step out with fear, being there, and reach out to people, I think, because often, sometimes, I think, especially when you're a freelancer, essentially, you're one of one, you know? But I think with our industry, it is definitely about networking. And I know, like, I get messages from people saying, oh, I'm just going to graduate soon, and, like, I'd love to learn a bit more about the industry. And oftentimes I'm crazy busy and I would love for them to jump on a job with me. But, you know what I mean? But also I can be able to be like, okay, why don't you try this or look into this, or, you know what I mean? I think it's definitely important to reach out. But I feel like if it's something that you want to do, like, don't let anything or anyone stop you from doing it.
I'm echoing
what she said.
Yeah,
I think reaching out is definitely the most important thing, and asking all the questions you can to people like us, people who are, you know, just use all of those resources that you have. I don't know what else, like, go. I'll say go for it.
How can people find or contact the Black Costumes Network?
You can reach us on Instagram @the Black Costume Network. You can email us, theblackcostumenetwork@gmail.com. Our website will be up and running very shortly, which will be theblackcostumenetwork.com. But at the moment, it's a work in progress. But yeah, even on our Instagram, like, we're currently working on the back end of that to make it a bit more prominent and relevant. We haven't got much up there. But if you do go to our Instagram, you can find the, you know, the little button that says email. You click on that, you can just send us an email. If not an email, send us a DM. But we'd love to hear from anyone and everyone that's interested in costume in general and interested in what we're doing at the Black Costume Network as well.
Yeah, amazing. I saw that John Boyega follows you guys.
Ooh, John! Yes! JB! Yeah, no, do you know what? Yeah, John is, he's another amazing, amazing guy. I met him working on Small Acts, and he also does school talks as well, especially in diverse areas. I know he did a lot in South London as well. And it was just, you know, we kind of were on the same page with regards to, like, getting more people from diverse backgrounds into film and TV. And I know obviously he's speaking as an actor and producer, director as well. I think he does a lot more of that as well. But you know, he said he really wants people to know about all different areas and departments. And I'm sure, you know, like people like the Black Sound Society, which started up by Ron, like, you know, there's things happening. And, you know, I think the plan is to eventually, you know, collaborate on this and allow people to really, really see us. But yeah, he when I told him about the Black Costume Network, he was gassed.
Yeah,
he was just like, well, yeah. So, but obviously he's a very busy guy, so hopefully we can connect and collaborate on some things moving forward.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your amazing journey. It's just incredible.